made.
Hello there, friends. Happy Thanksgiving week. It appears that Thanksgiving is the thing again. I don't have any fucking Christmas decorations up yet. I can't do fucking Christmas from Halloween to Christmas. I can't sustain that.
No.
Is that sustainable for you?
No, not at all.
Oh, and then I'm just pissed off because I've heard that music. And when I hear Christmas music, I'm kind of fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Mm-hmm. But fuck, man, then it becomes like you're locked in a prison cell hearing the same shit over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And then I go Christmas shopping and I'm like, get the fuck out of my way. And like, give me that. That's mine. And then it doesn't escalate that much. But
okay, can I interrupt here?
Please do.
Yeah, welcome, like listeners. This is the Man-Made Podcast.
Happy Thanksgiving.
That's Jeff, our shaman. He's riding shotgun. I'm Greg Allen. I'm got my hands on the wheel. I'm a lot worried today.
Not worried. Okay. And you're low on neuroticism, so for you to be a lot worried, then we ought to have some interesting. I have some small talk.
Oh, good. All right.
If is that okay?
Yeah,
please. Because we decided in our last episode that we needed to commit to it or not.
Yeah, I think we're in.
Okay. So the big thing in Evansville, right, was the implosion of the 420 Main building. So that tells you a little bit about life in Evansville, and there could be a correlation to why I drink so much. But it's like, and how long has this been going on, man? They've been talking about this.
Years.
Oh, my fucking God. Anyway, Sunday morning at 7 a.m. was the big day. And I procured, I don't know if that's the right use of that word, but I heard somebody say that word and I thought, I'm going to start using that. An invitation to watch the implosion from a previous guest of ours, Big Check Chapman. he has an office just down from where we record, looking right into the implosion area. And so we went down there, and there were Bloody Marys and mimosas, which is that's the main reason why we because we had to get up at 6:15. No, we were supposed to be there at 6:15, but whatever. Yeah. And so we went down there and probably drank a little bit more than I intended. Kind of came in a little hot on that, but I was still, it was okay. But then when the implosion happened, like I had like this like 9/11 flashback, like all of a sudden, like my chest tightened up and I was like, holy shit, holy shit. And then it was like, oh, that was awesome. And I'm not sure if I did all that out loud or internally,
right.
Because as I previously mentioned, I had a few of his delicious Bloody Marys. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that was my Sunday morning in Evansville, Indiana.
Yeah, and I saw your tape. Take that out, Eric.
Right, no. Leave that in.
I saw your recording on Facebook. That was neat.
I put the wrong one up first.
Yeah.
But then, and then there was 3,000 other ones.
Yeah,
on.
Right.
It was like, oh.
You thought it was just you.
Yeah, right. I totally did, man. When I put that up there, I had like this moment of narcissism where I'm like, I will be. And then it's like, there's just fucking 7,000.
Well, I had this great plan. Our condo is in the zone where you're.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, where you're not supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so my plan was, and it said the building's locked down from 5 a.m. to 11:30. So it's like, okay, I got to get out of here at 5. So I was all ready. I had everything. I was going to ride my bike out. I left my truck a couple blocks down the road. And then I was like, oh, I'll just go back to sleep. Next thing you know, it's like 6:30. I go, I can't get out of here. Huh. And I looked out the window. And there's people patrolling the street, you know. Wow. I don't know if they would arrest me, you know, but I didn't want to walk.
Just a tongue wagging or something.
Yeah.
I got your ass back in there.
So I went on back inside. But I had the television on to watch it, but I could see it from my balcony, kind of sideways, not a straight on view. So I'm walking towards the balcony, but I'm looking at the television, and it's like nothing's going on. They said, well, we got another 30 seconds, whatever. And then the thing started blowing up, you know.
And it was prompt. Like, it was very punctual.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was right before 7 o'clock, you know, maybe 10 seconds. But, yeah, so I'm standing at the balcony, and they said, you know, if you're in the building, they said, it definitely don't go outside. There's a few of us that have balconies or patios, and you know, I had to do it. I didn't mean to do it, but open the door and look out, and I see what looked like cinder blocks flying up against those transport carrier things, you know. And then the dog freaks out. But the neat thing was, is so I got this little seismograph app on my phone or whatever.
Okay.
So it didn't detect anything.
Huh.
It didn't do anything. But right now, I was up. It's actually in our loft, so that's suspended, so maybe that's something. But the cleanup effort is whacking the heck out of that thing. You know, I mean, the loft is moving.
Huh, interesting.
So, yeah, sort of.
It was kind of funny because when we were at the viewing party, the fact that we're talking about this as much as we are.
I know, I'm sorry.
Tells how pathetic, how little there is to do in our fair city.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably get in trouble for saying that. Anyway. But somebody was making the joke of, I wonder how many people will call 911 concerned about what happened. And we had a good laugh about that, right? Well, I had somebody on my Facebook thing like said, heard a loud crash. Is everyone okay? Like, are you fucking kidding me?
That's great.
We have been talking about this to death, and you are the one guy that somehow didn't know. Anyway, so probably more than you ever wanted to know about that. So we should probably make haste to get to the source of your nervousness today.
Okay, like what we're going to talk about?
Yeah, and I'm drinking this this magic water.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had it before?
No, I haven't. Is it doing anything?
I don't feel magical.
Okay. Give it time.
It's like electric or something.
Yeah. For our listeners, he's got a quart of water, drinking it out of a mason jar quart.
Yeah, and I was told I had to drink it like with a certain amount of haste because it was going to lose its
Oh, yeah. I can see the ions coming right out of the top.
Yes, fucking bullshit.
Right, but
okay. I was like, what? I want to see the ion. I literally started looking for the ions. Anyway. Not delicious, but I'm not going to let that interfere with our conversation today.
Yeah, and so apparently all this side talk is maybe we're just afraid to step into this because today we want to talk about what you would call death, what I want to call life. So
okay, those seem somewhat at odds, but here we go.
Well, yeah, they're so connected.
I'm calling it death and you're calling it life. Okay.
Well, you made me think about it when you made the... you brought up that quote about when death smiles upon you, be ready to smile back. I mean, that's all you can do.
It's not really, it's a little bit different, but death smiles at us all we can do is smile back.
I think I was
Marcus Aurelius, but yeah, okay, fair enough. But you know, I nitpick shit. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I shouldn't have tried it.
I annoy myself sometimes.
Okay.
Not very often, but sometimes actually. Yeah.
So in our life, we want to see what would it take to where we can smile back.
Right.
All right. So in that sense, sure, there's thoughts of death that you have to entertain. But what is it about life that we have?
Seems like you would, since the last I checked, the mortality rate stays at 100%. Right?
Right.
Has that changed?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, which is so fucking interesting that we know how the goddamn story ends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We know, like, boom, I'm gone.
Yeah.
And yet... what we do in the meantime is just astounding.
Yeah. Have you seen people, I mean, certainly you could have a healthy fear, but have you seen people trying to find ways to either avoid it or, I mean, avoid the thought of it, you know?
Seems like the number one way, especially in our country with its heritage, right, is just the promise of an afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, that's their salve to that wound.
Okay.
Is that there's a better life waiting for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
unless I don't make the cut, yeah, and then it's fucking dreadful. That's it.
So to those
people. Which is a huge downside for you afterlife people, right? Like,
but that reminds me of my first evangelical effort, which I was corrected immediately by someone more mature. I'd been a believer for like 8 days.
Yeah.
So I was ready.
Oh, and you had your enthusiasm, right? You were like, everybody wants to hear this. Yeah, I remember those days.
Yeah, now it wasn't exactly for me because I'm still sorting it out, but I'm thinking I got to live this. And so a friend of mine was cussing about something, and he goes, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to cuss around you anymore, which is ridiculous, but I said, no, dude, the way I understand it is the way you're living would suggest, I can't determine this, but indications would be that you're going to hell. So yeah, cuss, drink, fornicate, do what you need to do, because this is it. And he was like, okay. And somebody overheard, pulled me aside and said, we got to have another strategy.
Dude, you just kind of took some of the fun out of my drinking, fornicating. Wow.
Well, I thought, why hold back? Because when it's over, you're going to be, dang, I wish I'd have done that.
Oh, my gosh. That's fantastic.
So while we're on that, we somewhere along the line, I knew we were going to get to a spiritual component. You led with that.
Okay.
So let's just say, down to the basics, if we were to look at Jesus from a politically correct perspective, what could he have said that we could say, we could agree with that?
Oh, okay.
And that would be, death is real. It's going to happen. It's physical death.
Seems like it.
Yeah. Suffering is a thing,
Okay.
And live on purpose. So it's almost pulling the life out of Jesus's message by not saying what that purpose is, but that's not the purpose of this podcast. So he would say live on purpose. I mean, he showed that. We can't do it to the extent he did, but we can.
Should be able to, actually, based something on your own book. But
okay.
I'm just saying, you guys got the Holy Spirit.
Right. But
Holy Spirit's supposed to be supercharging you guys.
We can resist that a whole lot more than Jesus can.
Always got the trump card. There we go. You can resist the Holy Spirit? Then what good is the Holy, like?
Look, this is not what we're
getting
into.
Okay, sorry. All digress. All right, here we go. Back on track.
So that being said, we don't need to dive in deeper. I mean, we could in another podcast about all of that.
Yeah.
But it's enough to get us started on, do we understand from the beginning that the destination already been determined, or I should say that the termination of our life is inevitable from conception? And
that destination being death.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So is that something that would help out? I mean, if we could wrap our heads around that as early as we could, as early as we're making lifelong decisions,
right,
it seemed like that might be a guide for how to live today if I know that there's a specific number of them.
And the emphasis on work that out, I think every person deserves, right, to work it out on their own.
Okay.
And because none of us know for sure. Mm-hmm. Right. There, you don't know what happens when you die. I don't know what happens when we die. I wouldn't listen to me talk about, I'd,
right,
if I were you, listener, I'd make up your own fucking mind. Yeah. I wouldn't. And for me, at a much later stage in life, had to work that out on my own because of the environment that I was raised in. It was imposed from outside in, this is what happens when you die. Mm-hmm. And that was fucking stressful to me. Really fucking stressful.
Now what I'm curious is, how did that affect how you were living? Not
for me, it was a distraction from living.
Oh, okay.
Because it was what felt like a 50-50 chance, right? Mm-hmm. I got a chance at paradise, or I got a chance at eternal suffering. So that, for a very long time in my life, was the background noise. Mm-hmm. Did I say the prayer right? Am I doing enough? Well, I don't have to worry about that because I'm saved by grace. There was so much background noise that for me, became a profound distraction from being present in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I know a lot of, I don't know what categories we should use, but I know a lot of people find comfort in those religious ideas, you know, that there is another life, and I don't want to define that too much. So I was not afforded the opportunity to work it out mm-hmm. on my own.
Right.
And in the environment that I was in, that really wasn't even a possible. there was only one right answer, and you better give the right answer. And so when I started to divert from that and started to need to ask questions, what about this? What about this? What about this? Those were not, I wasn't permitted the working out of that.
Mm-hmm.
It just further imposed, this is what we believe, you're going to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm maybe over clarifying that, but I think what you said is categorically imperative. Mm-hmm. Each person has to work it out for themselves and should be afforded that and allowed to draw the outcome that they draw.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I land on this. This is where I land on this. I just think that's imperative.
Yeah. And then,
and that's a big deal, right? So with kids, that's going to start at a young age, but that's going to go on for a long time.
Yeah. 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 And you would think even as a child, you could see the finality in life because people around you are going to die, a grandparent or something, you know, and so you'll see that mortality idea.
Right.
And then the other part, the suffering part, you know, at what point in life can we realize, okay, there's junk that's going on and you cannot avoid it. You might be able to shift it or even ask for it in certain ways, but the suffering component, it seems like in order to live a life more fully, you have to understand first that it's finite in the physical sense, and that it will include suffering.
And that's where, for me, it was articulated differently, but I think there's illusions of this in your system. But Buddhism says life is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, man. Life is suffering.
Yeah.
And you can balk at that initially, and if you do, you just haven't lived long enough.
Yeah.
Because you're going to live long enough to experience profound suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is, if you're not going through suffering, somebody else is.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it may sound nihilistic to assume that life is suffering. It's like, life is not suffering. If you had a goddamn positive mental attitude, it's like,
yeah,
you and your positive mental attitude. It's like, no, that's fundamentally true.
Mm-hmm.
And two of the most significant, although that doesn't seem like a large enough word, experiences in life. One is to give comfort to someone who is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But the other is to receive comfort.
Oh, yeah.
That is so, it just, I don't have big enough words to receive comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an area in life for us men where we really, this is a catastrophic void for us.
Oh, yeah.
Where we don't, one, we can't even acknowledge in some form or fashion life is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
We sure as fuck can't say I am suffering.
Right.
And then subsequently, we sometimes give comfort, but we seldom receive it.
Right, right. Yeah, that's important. This, the whole doing life together is what's going to get us through that.
Right.
Well, something I'd like to do is use an example. My dad is who I wanted to bring up here because his mantra in life, all through his life, but in his last years, was I'm satisfied. And like that struck me, like, how did you come to that? And how did you get there?
Right.
You know, and
so he gets to a stage in life where is that kind of I'm ready to go?
No.
Life,
that, I'm
life
glad you asked that differently.
Okay.
It's not like I'm content, I'm finished.
Okay.
It's like whatever the experience was, the times I'm remembering before he was a lot older, it was things that might have went wrong.
Gotcha.
You know, and it's like, but he would relive it, and he would just say, "Oh, I'm satisfied." You know, like overall, it was good. Yeah, that was bad. This was bad, and all that, but it was good. You know, and then in his later years. And we used to love to watch him do this. When he was sitting down, he'd have his cane between his legs, just bouncing it on the ground here and there. And he would tell his story, and it'd be like, "Whoa, you endured that? Whoa, that's bad. Oh, man." You know, it's like, that's not good. And then he would kind of shake his head and tap his cane on the ground as if an exclamation point was like, "I'm satisfied." You know, like, on the whole, that was good. And the story that I used in his eulogy, which two of his friends from the, I don't want to say the early 30s, 1930s, one of them was at his funeral. That's amazing. Uh-huh. So every Friday, this was in the Great Depression, and they were working as kids just to make grocery money that was, you know, groceries were rationed, but they worked at a grocery store. Man, he was working the system back then. Right. But anyway, they would get a bottle of Coke on Friday, those little 6 3/4 ounce glass bottles. They would get it from the store owner and ride down the street away from everybody else and divide it between the three of them, you know, each of them sipping on it and stuff.
Oh, they got one Coke.
One Coke, yeah.
Wow.
And he would smile when he'd tell the story. "Oh, I'm satisfied." You know, now you could give a kid a 2 liter or whatever they want.
Oh, fucking right.
I mean, at Wendy's, you got 15 choices, you know, pressing buttons and doing whatever. I can't even get a drink out of there. I need to get some water.
Stress me the fuck out. I can't do that either.
Yeah. So I was looking at what made him that way. How did he get like that? And the funny thing is you asked me before if I'd ask him that. Uh-huh. I may have not used those words, but I know I initiated that conversation. Right. And I remember the type of response he gave, and I don't know if these are the words, but I know this is what he would have said if I was going to imitate him. If I were to say, you know, "Dad, what did you do, or what do I need to do even to end up at the end of life to say I'm satisfied?" And he would say, "Just live your life, son. You know you're going to die, so live." And then the third thing he'd say was, "Don't overthink it." He said that second only to "I love you." I mean, throughout our life, he'd say, "I love you, son," you know, and to me and a little bit to my brother. And he would always tell me, you just overthink it, you know. He'd give me instructions to go do something or just tell me to do something. And I was asked so many questions, you know, "How do you want this done? Do I do this? Well, if we do it this way." And I remember him saying, "Do I have to ABC you?" And I, as an older person, I'm thinking, well, heck yeah, if you want it done right. But I have this memory as a kid. I would be surprised if it was a preschooler, but it was somewhere early on. Because I remember thinking, "Do you have to ABC me? I don't know. But when I learn them, I'm going to nail those ABCs so we don't have to go through this." And I must have been a frustration to him, I know. But his point was, in his answer.
Well, because you overthink everything.
Absolutely.
His mantra was don't overthink.
Okay. Don't, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And when he would say just live, it's because he lived in such a way that it poured out of him naturally that was going to end in a point of satisfaction. He couldn't have told me why. I would have asked 100 ways. But I thought about, you know, well, how did he live his life? And I'd mentioned before with his input on dating was be respectful and be kind. Well, he also was a man of integrity and service. So he looked at how can I serve my family or God and my family and the community. And that's what his life embodied was service. I mean, he was a volunteer in the school system and all that for longer than he actually worked in the corporate world, you know, that fortunate because he lived that long, you know. But that's how his whole life was. But the cool thing is he was not afraid of death and he was not afraid of scarcity because he grew up in the Depression. Right. So scarcity, I mean, if we say, well, what do we don't have this or that? He's like, I've done without food, you know?
We just keep living is what we, right?
Yeah. And he wasn't afraid of dying. He volunteered enlisted for the Korean War, the arguably the most gruesome and bloody war that we'd been in. Mm-hmm. He volunteered for it, you know, and he comes back unscathed physically. You know, he had friends die, and he knew what that was like. He actually was in for 8 years. So, well, in the military 8 years. But so he wasn't afraid of the death thing. It was like that was a worthy service to do. So I'm thinking, what if I could embody that? Or what if we could, you know, as men, it's like, I'm not going to be afraid of dying. I'm going to serve other people, and I can get through scarcity. You know, I mean, we don't have the background to say we've made it through with a loaf of bread for six of us for 2 weeks. Yeah. We can't say that, but I mean, and he can. So I don't know what we'd have to rely on to say we could do it. But at some point,
we used to have story, right? We used to have story.
Yes. That, yes.
You know, men like that would tell their story, mm-hmm. and then that story would literally code in our brain mm-hmm. to where we would, okay, that's coded in my brain. Yeah. I could do that.
Yeah.
And you think about our use of story mm-hmm. in our life now. It's almost gone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, children's stories and all the wisdoms of, you know, the boy that cried wolf, or, you know, all of those little, but the power of story that used to just be told over and over and over again. Now you can remember, right? What was one of the most common things pre-technological explosion that a kid would say to their parent? Will you tell me a story?
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah. Read me a story, right? Or tell me. Yeah.
Yeah. And now story is almost, it's almost gone.
Yeah.
And it's been replaced with the life-enhancing TikTok and YouTube.
Yeah. And that's nothing, you know.
Right. It doesn't have the power of story.
No. So another thing that I think steals our time and deprives us of joy or even the present is some type of preoccupation, mm-hmm. you know, to where we're just not even present. I mean, we've talked about how important that is.
Right.
And I thought about that with my dad, like, why would he was never worried about anything. And when you think about financial stuff, you know, he worked a modest job for 34 years and retired. But I remember they bought some property when I was a child, because what you did back then is you bought property and then you got everybody together and you built a house, you know. And then they decided, well, we don't want to live out there. But the values were going up. They could have held on to it and whatever. But he didn't want to be worried about that. He just sold it, you know. The same thing with when he retired. There was all kind of people saying, well, look, you need to put your 401k here, your IRAs here, whatever, and do all that. And he goes, no, I'm finished with that. Put that in a savings account at the bank. I know where it is. I can go get it. It's like, well, that's financially like putting your head in the ground. You know, it's like, that doesn't make sense. But I say that, but he did that in the early 80s. So he knows nothing about the financial crisis of 87, you know, was it Black Monday or something like that? Yeah. And then 2002, the dot-com bubble, right. Or 2008. He doesn't know anything about that, because his money was still raking in 3.75%, you know, for 30 years. So he never saw the spikes, never, you know, got to benefit from the gains, but he didn't also lose 50% of his value overnight, you know?
Right.
So he never was thinking about that.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, how can we as men get to the point where, yeah, we want to make decisions we think are wise and prudent, but how can we not be preoccupied with that? And you brought up a term before about, where does your mind go in unoccupied moments? So what are you thinking about when you're not forced to think about something?
Right.
So how do we get there? How do we?
Well, I'll go back to your earlier statement where you have to work it out. And I do think you have to, you know, there's a common phrase in psychology and self-help and all that bullshit, begin with the end in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is useful.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is very, very useful to begin my life with the end in mind. Now, obviously, I have to, you know, at five, I may not want to start with the gravity of that.
Yeah, right.
But at some point, and there's a point in our development where we do start to become aware of our mortality, and we start to worry about our parents dying and those kinds of things. You know, that's fairly young. You know, it's fairly young that we become preoccupied with our parents' mortality and mm-hmm. what would we do. So we start to have this understanding, yeah. and it's useful to have conversations about that. But we tend to try to comfort those kinds of things. Yeah. But for me, I had to work that out. For me, the thought of an afterlife was stressful as fuck. The thought of living forever was terrifying. You have got to be kidding me. I don't need that, man. Forever? And then the thought of heaven and hell, and am I going? So for me, that became such a distraction mm-hmm. that it was taking me away from my life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the comfort of letting all that go, like, I don't believe there's an afterlife. Yeah. I believe when you die, you're done. Mm-hmm. You go back into the energy of the universe. Well, we won't get into all that. But it's like now when I start living with a sense of urgency that I don't get any more time. This is my time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not distracted by where am I going to spend eternity. And I know some people find that comforting. Yeah, and if you find that comforting, woohoo, great for you.
It was distracting for you. It's messing with your present.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So when I start thinking about, this is the only time I get with Greg. This is the only time that I get with my kids. Mm-hmm. This is it. That doesn't terrify me.
Okay.
That keeps me rooted in the present.
Yes.
That keeps me thinking about this is it. Mm-hmm. Like, are you going to die where people, no one shows up at your funeral and like he was a dick? Or are you building something mm-hmm. to where your children want to comfort you? That when your eulogy is spoken, that they can actually say something that was useful, that you gave more to this life than you took mm-hmm. from it. Mm-hmm. Those are my values. That got me back in the present.
Yeah.
And I think when I heard that Marcus Aurelius quote, "Death smiles at us all we can do is smile back," it's like, that is fucking true. Mm-hmm. That's not morbid. That's not that's not taking my power away where I'm just sitting in fear. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I can live my life with a smile on my face knowing that it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And again, for me, being as invested in the present as I can possibly be, and I want to live a long life. I want, you know, I'm not like, I don't want to die. I don't want to, you know, when my doctor says you got to cut back on your bourbon intake, then I will.
For a week.
But not a day before. Not a fucking day before.
Okay.
You know, those kinds of things. But I know your orientation is completely different, and then your belief in an afterlife, those kinds of things are very inspiring to you to living more in the present.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. But I could see where a guy could be preoccupied with the finality of it, whether he thought there was something beyond this physical life or not. And so you've managed to dispel that. So
and some people are comforted by it and some people are not.
Yeah,
and that's okay. It's okay for you to be comforted in your belief that there is an afterlife. And it's okay for me to be comforted in the fact that this is all the time that I get, and I want to be as present as I can possibly be in this time. And you and I can actually respect each other's, the fact that we've both done the process. Mm-hmm. You have worked it out for you. I have worked it out for me. They inspire us in ways that are more congruent than incongruent, so we can now just live life together. Mm-hmm. But you got to work it out for yourself. You can't fucking go ask anybody else because nobody knows. Nobody knows if we die and there's more or we don't. People can give arguments as to why there is an afterlife. People can give arguments why there's not. It's like, or We can stop wasting our time with those arguments. We can stop thinking that somebody else is going to have a satisfying answer to this question for me, and I can dig in and I can figure out what it is that I believe, because death does smile at us all, mm-hmm. and all we can do is smile back. And I choose this belief system to have a smile when death smiles at me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we can be intentional about what we're going to do from here to there, from here to the, and think it through. And we need to recognize as well that not everybody's going to do it the same way. I think it was Seneca that said, some people might approach something with a physical activity for toil and pleasure and just being themselves. And some people approach it with the quiet reflection. And I used to think, oh, I might be doing this wrong, because I'm totally content sitting and reading or writing or drawing. I could do that for too many hours. Yeah. You know? But when it's time to be with the people that I need to be with, I'm okay with that. But I used to think, man, should I be out there doing something? Should I be interacting? Should I be jumping up and down? I'm not inclined to do that. Yeah. But yeah, so we have to, even how people express that on a day-to-day basis, we have right. to be open to that.
And I'll be honest, man, I switched teams when my mom died.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when her faith was so important to her, and to be there when she was, you know, finally passing. And I mean, it was terrifying and it was amazing, you know, to give her comfort. For her to believe that she was going to see me in heaven was the most important thing to her, mm-hmm. you know, and she would tell me the story every day, sometimes more lucid than others, about her dedicating me to God and that, you know, once I gave my life to Jesus, there was no taking it back, and that she knew that she was going to see me in heaven. I'm not going to fucking, like, Mom, okay, enough of this bullshit. Like, it's like, okay, that is giving you comfort right now. Mm-hmm. And you telling me this is giving me comfort, because we were both suffering in different ways. She's suffering because she's dying from cancer, and I'm suffering because I'm losing my mom. So in that moment, we recognize the suffering and we give each other comfort, and it was a beautiful and wonderful thing. And it's, why the fuck don't we value comforting each other more than being right?
Oh, right.
And I don't have a good answer to that question.
Yeah.
But hopefully, as our listeners are engaging in this process, and they really do start to evaluate some of these things, and it's fucking heavy, right? Thinking about my own mortality and thinking about death is a little bit heavy. Mm-hmm. Not sure why we did it on Thanksgiving, but...
that's what we did.
There you go. Well, we're giving you answers, right? You can find... I mean, you can find comfort in this, and you got to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go watch YouTube or TikTok.
Yeah. That's right.
Get that fucking dopamine boost. Yeah. Ah, fuck this. I'm going to go waste hours of my life watching YouTube videos.
Yeah. All
right.
Yeah. So
your choice.
We would have to say, you know, don't forget the past. I mean, that's what's shaped a lot of good ways of looking at things. And don't neglect the future, or don't neglect the present, because that's what we have.
Right.
And then don't be in fear of the future.
Right.
It's like, let's live now, but on purpose,
right.
You know, and sorting that out each other. And as always, we're more than willing to dive into this as far as anybody wants to go.
Right.
So just contact us if you want to go deeper on any of these topics.
And be very cognizant of resistance, because this is an idea that we can be very resistant to, our own mortality and kind of thinking about our meaning and those kinds of things. And it's interesting, right? Because it's kind of a new psychological era. that we're even afforded the opportunity to be thinking about these, that we're not just so preoccupied with daily survival, that we actually get to think about what am I doing with my life. And that's one of the things that Marcus Aurelius, he wrote his Book of Meditations, and it was a pretty brutal world that he lived in. Now, Rome was a pretty established empire, so he was afforded some thoughts that some of the other people that the Romans were conquering were not, which I'm, that's not the point of this, but it's just, that's where that resistance kicks in when we start to think about that, because it's like, oh shit, can't think about death, can't think about death. And it's like, well, we're at a time right now where we don't have to worry about our survival every day. And we can think beyond that, and we need to, because that's where real meaning and my real sense of security lies when I work this out for myself.
Yes. Well, that's great. That's great.
See, I don't know what the fuck you're so nervous about.
No, I was nervous about what you were going to do at the beginning as the opening question.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just was, I was like, fuck that. I'm going to go on a holiday rant.
Yeah, you did.
I had to let that out to get through the holidays.
I'm glad you did. And you're absolutely right. If you start Christmas and the end of August, you'll never make it to December.
I won't. Like, I'm an ass. So I have to guard myself from that shit. And I got people bringing it in my office all the time and like wanting to put Christmas music on. And it's, again, it's not that I'm opposed to these things, but it's like too much chocolate. I eventually get sick, So just, let's just hold off on that and bah humbug for now.
Okay. Well, let's wrap this up. But really, guys, be sure and contact us if you have any questions or want to go further with any of this, Facebook or our website. Either one. Check it out.
Anyway, just get in touch with us. We'd be happy to help if we can. Happy Thanksgiving to you all.
Merry Christmas as well.
Fucking not that. No. Man-made.